I'm George Stevens, and I'm a person. I was held as property as a child. Even before my birth, I was called a slave in an America you wouldn't recognize. But folks like you helped me escape north to freedom. And in 1864, I joined the infantry to fight for my country. I fought so all slaves would be recognized as persons, not property. And we won. But today in Colorado, there are still people called property. Children, just like I was. And that America you thought you wouldn't recognize is all around you. And these children are being killed. This November, vote yes on Amendment 62. Amendment 62 declares unborn children persons, not property. And that's the America I fought for. So visit personhoodcolorado.com. And in November, vote yes on 62. It's the right thing to do.
Greetings once again from Denver, Colorado, the city right here in the middle of it all. You may have heard the news. But stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. So glad to have you back on the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And that was the first commercial to be cut for the coming personhood campaign. Here in the great state of Colorado, Amendment 62 will be on the ballot in November, and forces are plotting a massive media campaign, and that's the first commercial. Awfully well done, I must say. Kudos to my friends there at Personhood Colorado and at Colorado Right to Life. It was a joint venture, from what I understand. Outstanding. Good stuff. All right. So here we are, heading into another week, probably another tempestuous week of politics and the culture war and all of that. So I want to start with a story from right here in Colorado, just to try to lift your spirits. I've got a couple stories to start off with that I really think will lift your spirits. We're going to start in Denver, Colorado, from the Reuters Wire. Christopher Wobben, a 22-year-old American, was delivering pizza late last week to the suburban Denver home of George Lynn when he heard the man's wife screaming for help. Apparently, the husband had gone into cardiac arrest, and the wife was quite apoplectic, but somewhere in there, they found time to order a pizza, probably before the heart attack. Anyway, Chris Wobben, 22-year-old American, he told the wife that he was trained in CPR, and he knew what to do. He got him off the floor. He brought him back to life with CPR before the fire department showed up. Now, Chris Wobben, 22-year-old American, is a military veteran who recently moved to Colorado after he was laid off from his paramedic job back in the great state of Illinois.
Wow.
Isn't that awesome? Saved the guy's life, and the pizza was still hot, from what we understand. Now, at least one local hospital and a fire department here in the metro Denver area have called to offer Chris Wobben, American, they've called to offer him a job in his chosen field as a paramedic. And congratulations, Chris. It's good to know that you're in the neighborhood. All right, now tell me that doesn't just fire you up about being an American and about honoring our military veterans and about this poor guy delivering pizzas. I mean, that's a hard charger. I mean, he gets laid off in Illinois, comes to Colorado, he's delivering pizzas. I mean, this guy is he is Exhibit A in the story of the Obama recovery. And basically what Exhibit A teaches us that, you're going to have to try really hard if you're going to make it through the Obama recovery. And, not only is Chris going to make it, he's probably going to get a job at a hospital or a fire department, but the guy who ordered the pizza is going to make it too, at least for a little while longer. All right. Now, what are you saying there?
Maybe he shouldn't eat pizza.
Maybe he should consider not eating the pizza. Maybe that's a sign. Anyway, we're not going to fault the gentleman for his choice of dinner that evening. But maybe he should think about mixing in a salad once in a while. Okay, so point taken. All right, now let's move on to another story that's bound to lift your spirits. This one from CNN. Pigeons. Did you hear what I said? I said pigeons. Pigeons forced the band Kings of Leon to abandon their St. Louis, Missouri concert after just three songs last Friday night. Apparently, according to CNN, an infestation of the birds in the rafters at the amphitheater at which the band Kings of Leon were playing, well, the birds bombarded the musicians as soon as they took the stage. According to a spokesperson for the band, the aerial attack began during the opening song when the bass player was bombed directly in the face. Now, his bass tech wiped most of the offensive offal off with a sanitary wipe, but excrement struck each of the bass player's arms over the next two numbers. And at that point, he said, man, get me out of here. He's quoted as saying, if we had stayed by the end of the show, quote, I would have been covered from head to toe, unquote. And so the Kings of Leon fled the amphitheater there in St. Louis, Missouri. They need to give a call to Billy the Exterminator, right? You catch him on A&E, Billy the Exterminator and his brother Rick. They exterminated some pigeons out of an amphitheater. I think it was in, it's probably in Louisiana. That's where they're from. So they've got experience. And the only bad thing about that show is that they normally don't kill the animals. Now, like, they didn't kill the pigeons at the amphitheater. And they're always live releasing alligators and snakes except bugs. They do kill bugs. They kill bees. They kill mosquitoes. Bugs they will kill, and upon occasion they will kill an alligator if it's too big. Anyway, that just lifts my spirits, just to think of a headlining act fleeing the stage. Now, the opening acts, as I read through this story, the poor opening acts, which were bands, they're called the Postels and the Stills, they played their entire sets, the openers did. Now that's when you know you've gotten somewhere in the in show business, is when the pigeon droppings start flying and you can just bail and say I'm out of here. If you've got to stay and do your whole gig, you are the opening act. So the Postels and the Stills had to finish their entire sets, but they warned the Kings of Leon of the bombardment. All right. Now, so our plug for Billy the Exterminator there. He dresses up like an 80s rock star, and he goes out and catches these animals. It's pretty cute. We enjoy watching. He has no tattoos. No. And as far as we know, he's never played an actual instrument. He's an Air Force vet. Yeah. That's right. He's an Air Force vet and quite the exterminator. He could have helped the Kings of Leon. He could have helped their opening act, I should say. All right, now let's move on to serious news, because there is plenty of it. I'm sure everyone in the audience is familiar with the controversy surrounding British Petroleum and the release of the Lockerbie bomber. We've heard this subtly in the background noise of the media that perhaps British Petroleum lobbied the Scottish government to release the Lockerbie bomber. And indeed, it appears that BP was lobbying it to some degree. But one thing we were all assured of by Barry Ho and the Obama administration was that they were surprised and shocked. Well, listen to this. Correspondence obtained by the Sunday Times of London reveals the Obama administration considered compassionate release more palatable than locking up Abdelbasat El-Megrahi, the Lockerbie bomber. They thought that releasing him was a better idea than transferring him to a Libyan prison. The intervention on behalf of the United States government was made by Richard LeBaron, deputy head of the U.S. Embassy in London, a week before Megrahi was freed in August of last year on the bogus grounds that he was dying of cancer. So the Sunday Times of London has the document. They've got the evidence. And the document threatens to undermine, according to The Australian, which is where we got this story, threatens to undermine U.S. President Barry Ho's claim last week that all Americans were surprised, disappointed, and angry to learn of Megrahi's release. According to The Australian, the U.S. government had tried to keep the letter secret, as you can well imagine. In the letter, sent on August 12th last year to Scottish First Minister Alex Salmond and justice officials, Mr. LeBaron, deputy head of the U.S. Embassy in London, he wrote that the U.S. wanted Megrahi to remain imprisoned in view of the nature of his crime. Nevertheless, says the letter, nevertheless, there's always a nevertheless with Barry Ho and British Petroleum and large amounts of money and oil, whenever that's involved. Nevertheless, if Scottish authorities come to the conclusion that Megrahi must be released from Scottish custody, the U.S. position is that conditional release on compassionate grounds would be far preferable, would be a far preferable alternative to prisoner transfer, which we strongly oppose. So at the beginning of the letter, they go from saying, we want him to remain in prison, but we don't want him to be transferred to a Libyan prison. In fact, if he were released on compassionate grounds, we would find that preferable. And so while you and I may have been shocked and angered, and the families of the victims of Pan Am 103 may have been shocked and angered and saddened, and citizens there in the nation of Scotland may have been shocked, surprised, angered, Barry Ho and Hillary Rodham Clinton and all the rest of them were not nearly as surprised as they seem to want us to believe they were. And so BP, forget BP lobbying, because BP's just in it for the money. They just want to drill deep water off Libya. And, they could have some ethical standards over at BP. You'd think. You'd think they'd have some ethical standards over at BP. But a giant corporation in pursuit of profit is not held to as high a standard as the last stand of freedom on earth, the United States of America. And it seems we've lost our moral compass. To quote Hillary, we've lost our moral compass a bit, I believe, there up at headquarters at the Barry Ho administration. All right. So that is our first headline from the war file. Let's move on into the war file. Dateline Kabul, Afghanistan. This is from CNN. Two foreign troops who went missing last Friday in Afghanistan are Americans who have been abducted, according to an Afghan intelligence source. Now, we know that one of the missing troops, Navy personnel, has since been found dead. The Taliban has claimed responsibility to some degree, it appears, for what they're calling an abduction. These two went missing after leaving their compound in Kabul in a military vehicle. And, on top of all that, five U.S. soldiers were killed in bombings in southern Afghanistan in the past week. So what I don't understand here is if the Taliban captures two American troops in a military vehicle, I thought we were at war. Wouldn't the proper reportage be that they were taken prisoner by the enemy? But no, they say they've been abducted. Abducted, they say. I mean, I thought we were at war with the Taliban in Afghanistan and that they were the enemy. And enemies take prisoners, and so do we. I mean, when we capture them, do we say that we've abducted them? I think we've taken them prisoner. Anyway, it's a linguistical thing. It's a semantic thing. But it just goes to show that we no longer understand what it means to be at war. And we're not fighting a very effective war there in Afghanistan. And I'm afraid, and I'm sad to report to you that I'm afraid that it will end badly in Afghanistan. All right. Let's move on to North Korea. North Korea, according to the Bloomberg Wire, North Korea has declared It will counter U.S. and South Korean joint naval exercises with, quote, nuclear deterrence, unquote. Nuclear, I said. That's what they claim, yeah. Hillary Clinton is nonplussed by the threat, apparently. She says, in what we hope is a drug-induced condition that will soon pass for Hill, she says, quote, the door remains open for North Korea. We are willing to meet with them, willing to negotiate, to move toward normal relations. Excuse me, Hillary? They just threatened a nuclear deterrent, and she says the door remains open. Okay. U.S. State Department spokesman Philip J. Crowley then took a handful of pills himself, apparently, and said that North Korea, quote, would be better served by reflecting on the current situation, not taking any further aggressive actions or provocative steps. We're just hoping they'll chill out. We're going to send them some Ativan. We've got a lot of it. A lot at the State Department. All right. Good news, though. The USS George Washington, a nuclear-powered carrier and three destroyers, were called into South Korean ports this week in a show of force. So someone... This is good news. They've got the USS George Washington, three destroyers. I like that. Someone at the Defense Department must be off his meds. Get it on, indeed. By the way, the exercise that the North Koreans are so upset about, the exercise with the South Korean military is underway. Yeah, get it on. That was 1989, Kingdom Come. I know, everybody thought it was Led Zeppelin, but it's not. Anyway, the exercise is underway, and we will see if the North Koreans deliver on their promise of a nuclear deterrent. I mean, with our military in Iraq and Afghanistan, the last thing we need is to open up a front in the Far East with the Koreans. That would not be good. It would be distasteful, to say the least. Speaking of distasteful, let's move on and through the war file. The Palestinian Authority slash Palestine Liberation Organization mission there in Washington, D.C., will be upgraded from a bureau to a general delegation, and this change will allow the office to fly the PLO flag in Washington, D.C. Talk about distasteful. But by the way, upgrade to the state of a delegation also grants certain privileges to the delegation staff, such as diplomatic immunity. Yeah. Diplomatic immunity for the PLO and their flag flying in Washington, D.C. Tell me I've woken up in an alternate universe, please. And somebody please stop it. Just unbelievable. But that's the Department of State under Hill, Hillary and Barry. Barry and Hill there. The PLO flag in Washington. All right. Let's have some entertaining news from the war file. This is from AFP, the French press agency. Four Iranian lawmakers plan to make a trip to the blockaded Gaza Strip this week by traveling through Egypt. Yes. Said one, Mahmoud Ahmadi Big Hash. I said his name is Mahmoud Ahmadi Big Hash. He is a member of Iranian parliament. he said, this trip will be made next Tuesday. We will go to our oppressed brethren there in Palestine. Yeah, the Iranian news agency quoted another member of parliament there in Iran as saying that four Iranian lawmakers would enter Gaza through the Rafah crossing out of Egypt. And now you'll remember, back in June, the Iranian Red Crescent said it was planning to send an aid ship to Gaza, but later canceled the voyage due to a lack of courage on behalf of the illustrious Iranian diplomats. The Islamic Republic there in Iran does not recognize Israel, according to AFP, and tensions have worsened between the two countries under President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, who has repeatedly said that the Jewish state is doomed to disappear. did I read that right? Excuse me, AFP journalists. Ahmadinejad has repeatedly said the Jewish state is doomed to disappear. Well, I think that's soft-pedaling it just a little bit on behalf of the journalists there at AFP. Let me just pull a couple of quotes, and you can find dozens of these on the internet from Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. October 26, 05, Israel must be wiped off the map. November of 06, Israel is destined for destruction and will soon disappear. April 2006, Israel is a rotten, dried tree, said Ahmadinejad, that will be eliminated by one storm. Now that's a little stronger than just doomed to disappear. For you journalists there at the AFP. April of 2006, Ahmadinejad said, Israel cannot logically continue to live. But over at the AFP, they just say that, well, there's been some amorphous, you know, they don't get along, and Ahmadinejad said, you know, they're doomed to disappear, something like that. Anyway, so it just annoys me the way journalists, well, the way they write. It's disingenuous, I think. And they always soft-pedal the Islamic madmen. The same Islamic madmen who, if they took over, would cut off these journalists' head. I just don't get it. I think perhaps one must be deranged to get a journalism degree. That must be one of the preparatory courses must involve surrendering one's sanity in order to be a journalist. All right, more from the war file. Well, there's a lot of war going on right now. Now, this is a story designed to lift your spirits. From CBS, the U.S. Navy has used a new laser weapon to shoot down four unmanned aerial vehicles. All right. It's called the Phalanx Close-In Weapon System, now includes a high-powered laser. How cool is that? The successful test of the laser weapon system off the coast of California was announced during an air show in England. Scientific American magazine notes that the shootdown of the drones over water constitutes an advance over previous Raytheon tests, which focused on static targets. So we've used a laser now to shoot down a moving target. What did we have? A few weeks ago, we had the flying car. Didn't we have something else amazing last week? Oh, yeah, camera for your eye. Now we're shooting down drones with lasers. I mean, how cool is that? Oh, now here's the kicker. CBS, now they're journalists. And the folks over at the Defense Department, the ones who are off their meds, the fellows who deployed the destroyers and the nuclear-powered carrier there in South Korea, they don't trust the folks over at CBS. Trust me on that. So CBS closes it out by saying, regarding the laser weapon system, don't expect deployment anytime soon. It's likely going to take several more years before it's ready for a combat situation, which tells me that laser is ready to rock and roll. I can assure you that the Defense Department doesn't let a story out to CBS that we've shot down a drone with a laser unless the laser is ready to shoot down, well, just about anything that flies overhead in a combat situation. And I'm thankful, because the last thing you want over a battlefield is pieces of chunks of missiles falling out of the air. A laser is nice and clean. I saw the video on this. It was really spectacular to watch the laser take out the drone. And it's good to know that we have that in the arsenal. And I believe it's operational, or the bozos at CBS would not know about it. At least I hope that's the case. I really do. All right. Now let's move into the justice file. So you got your spirits elevated from that last story. Let's see. Do we have anything in the justice file this week? That's not going to. No, that's. Well, the justice file is it's fairly depressing. But we're going to go through it. We're going to soldier on because these are stories you need to know about. These are stories that get reported on the wire services. I mean, anybody can get these stories, but they're not widely reported by the mainstream media. From Detroit, the Associated Press, a killer for hire who admitted murdering 8 people and other victims he can't remember was sentenced last Friday to at least 52 years in a plea deal that spared him from a mandatory life term and averted a series of emotional, complicated, time-consuming trials. So again, prosecutors have made a deal with an admitted murderer. Yeah. The judge is Wayne County Circuit Judge Craig Strong, working in cahoots with the prosecutors and the defense to cut a deal for this scumbag murderer. This fellow says he was a hitman hired to kill people who crossed drug dealers. His last job was the fatal shooting of Rose Cobb, a Detroit police officer's wife, in 2007. What is this dirtbag's name? I'm sure I have his name here somewhere. Vincent Smothers is his name. Vincent Smothers will be eligible for parole when he's about 80 years old, which in the current prison system, there's a good chance he'll make 80. I mean, they feed you well, you get some exercise, read a lot of books. Anyway, the judge said it was shocking to read that Smothers told an interviewer that he killed other people, but he can't even remember their names. The judge was shocked. And then the judge said, this is actually a minimal punishment. The judge said Smothers, quote, will be alive. He'll have the benefit of health care. He'll have the benefit of life that is not cruel. That's what the judge said. He was shocked, appalled, and then he signed off on it because he's just a cog in the wheel, in the system of an unjust justice system. So as shocked and distraught as he was, he still signed off on the deal that allows a murderer of a policeman's wife, no less, to live. And that is just sad. All right, more from the justice file. From Los Angeles, California. I don't even know if I want to do this. All right, I'll do it. A man who assaulted his girlfriend's 11-year-old daughter, then killed her after she bit off a part of his tongue during the attack, was sentenced to death last Friday for the second time. In 2003, according to the AP, the California Supreme Court upheld the conviction of James Heard, murderer, but overturned his first death sentence, finding the trial judge improperly excused a man during jury selection. Do you understand what I just said? Of course you don't understand it because it doesn't make any sense. Here's a man convicted of murder, sentenced to death, and his death sentence is overturned because a judge somewhere along the line improperly excused a juror or a potential juror. James Heard, who's now 58 years old, was sentenced again in Los Angeles County Superior Court for the 1990 murder of Katrina Brown. 20 years without justice for Katrina Brown. Here's what happened, folks, if you can stomach this. Heard was living in Compton when the assault occurred while the girl's mother was at work. This is his girlfriend's daughter. Prosecutors said she bit off a part of his tongue during the attack. So Heard poured a bottle of rubbing alcohol down her throat to make her regurgitate the piece of tongue before he stomped and strangled her to death after violating her. Heard testified last year that he'd been drinking and smoking crack cocaine for more than a day and remembered nothing of the attack. And he said he had a lot of love in his heart for his girlfriend and the daughter that he murdered. Do I want to go into this and explain? Under death penalty rules in California, jurors are asked whether they could sentence someone to death. If they cannot, they're allowed to be excused. Well, in this case, the excused juror said he believed that life was a life in prison was more severe punishment than death. And because of that, the judge excused him, and that's how this murderer's sentence was over. I just don't understand it. The high court said the judge excused the man without knowing whether he would be willing to vote for the death penalty. And somehow this... bottom line is the guy's been sentenced to death for a second time. But here we are 20 years later, and it might be another 20 years before this fellow actually enters the death chamber, if ever. He's 58 years old, for crying out loud. He could die in prison of natural causes before he's ever sent to the death chamber, and that is just depressing. Now, one more. This is from the Domestic Tranquility file. One more before we go to a break here. A Facebook feud between two women who claim to love the same prison inmate has led to a high-speed chase and a crash, injuries, deaths. Tori Emery, a 23-year-old airhead, and Danielle Booth, an equally stupid 20-year-old, according to the AP. I said ignorant and stupid, the AP didn't, but they had been feuding for some time. The dispute was over a 23-year-old man serving time in a Michigan prison. Well, last Wednesday, Emery was driving when she saw Booth in the passenger seat of a car driven by Alicia Abernathy and started chasing her. Now, the woman chasing the other woman had her three-year-old daughter in the car with her. And she starts chasing at speeds approaching 100 miles an hour, according to police. Well, Abernathy, the girl driving, being chased, ran a red light and plowed into a dump truck. Abernathy was killed, and Booth was critically injured. One official said, quote, "How can you get that angry or jealous, really, that you jeopardize the life of your three-year-old?" My goodness. How does that happen? Wow. Well, that's the state of domestic tranquility in America, where young adults, the 20-something crowd, have placed very little value in the life of a child. Very little. But they seem to have been conditioned by the culture to put their wants, their needs, their desires, their lusts, their anger above all else. Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney, just trying to recover from the justice file and the domestic tranquility file. Every week it's a struggle to get through. And I'll tell you what, there are at least 20 other stories that I could have downloaded about just the mayhem and murder going on in the streets of the freest nation on God's green earth. It's enough to, it's enough to make one question the future of America. Western civilization in general. But we're thankful that there are people out there doing something about it. And we'll get to some of that a little bit later. Now let's return to the domestic tranquility file. A teenager killed his mother and his siblings before committing suicide last Thursday. A note was found along with a melted butane lighter in the Staten Island home of Lisa Jones and three of her children. Her body, along with her three children, were found in their torched apartment early last Thursday. Her fourth child, a two-year-old boy, was pulled out alive, but died later at the hospital. Police believe the teenage son... The two young girls found in the house had died of neck wounds. Their throats had been slit. The two-year-old died of smoke inhalation and burns. The male teenager believed to have started the fire, his throat was also apparently slit. And police say the deaths appear to be the result of a murder-suicide committed by the boy. They have not completely ruled out the possibility that the mother was the killer. As if that were no less horrifying. A straight razor was found underneath the boy's body. The 32-year-old mother was from Trinidad and attended beauty school during the day. Detectives questioned the 2-year-old victim's father, who is not considered a suspect. The other children all have different fathers. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you know, people mistakenly believe that anything can be defined as a family. Anything. But anything other than one man, one woman, and children is actually not a family. It's something less than a family. It's broken. It's defective. It's less than optimum. No matter what people think and no matter what you want to call it to make yourself feel better, it's not a family. So here we have a woman with 3 children, all have different fathers. And not that this couldn't have happened in a normal family, don't get me wrong. But it does seem that the incidents of violence, crime, and other untoward events and behavior seem to run rampant in those units that the liberals insist we call families. So a woman shacking up with every other guy and having a kid by 3 or 4 different fellas and they all live with her, that's called a broken family. Anyway, that certainly is a broken family. What an awful story. All right. Let's move into the politics file where hopefully we can get some laughs, because the justice file and the domestic tranquility file is enough to bring a normal person to tears. Let's start in Tennessee. From CNN, Texas Governor Rick Perry, back in April of 2009, suggested that his state, the great state of Texas, may consider secession. You remember that in the wake of the Obama healthcare bull run? You remember that? Well, according to CNN, Rick Perry drew a round of mockery nationwide. I always wonder, why, do you mean around the CNN studios you mock Rick Perry? Because Rick Perry was not mocked nationwide, as I recall. In fact, CNN reports that Perry's suggestion of secession earned him serious traction among GOP primary voters, and he went on to defeat Senator Kay Bailey Hutchinson in their race. So while CNN was mocking Rick Perry was trouncing the opposition, suggesting that Texas may consider secession in the wake of these new federal mandates that have, well, frankly, freaked out anyone who's familiar with the Constitution and all that. And like American history and things like that. Well, now, according to CNN, another gubernatorial hopeful is test driving a similar message. Now Representative Zach Womp, one of 3 candidates seeking the GOP gubernatorial nomination in Tennessee, told Hotline On Call that Perry had the right idea. Womp argued that mandates forced on the states by the Obama administration's health care bill have put secession on the table. Ooh. Zach Womp says, quote, "I hope that American people will go out the ballot box in 2010 and 2012 so that states are not forced to consider separation from this here government." Unquote. Yeah, secession. So, you know, many people mistakenly believe that America is the way it is, and this is the way it always has been and the way it always will be. Well, for those of you who are paying attention, yes, it has been thus for more than 200 years, and it's been a pretty good run. But as I said, my gosh, sometime last year, it's over. America is over. It is no longer what it was. And secession, I believe, is within my lifetime, there will be a splitting of the nation. It simply cannot continue thus. And hopefully the federal authorities, who seem to think that we are their slaves, hopefully the federal authorities will realize that it is within the right of a free state to secede from this union. When this union becomes corrupt and is an enemy of mankind and is a criminal enterprise, when that happens, a free state has the right to secede without violence. There's no need for violence. I hope the feds understand that when the time comes and when the votes are cast. I predict that we shall see that in my lifetime and in your lifetime. All right. More from the politics file. Governor Ryan. Yeah, okay. Here we go. This is this story. I keep getting bits and tidbits of this story, and I want to know what's going on. From Des Moines, which is in Iowa. From the Associated Press, two former employees of a U.S. Department of Education contractor in Iowa have pleaded guilty to illegally viewing President Barack Obama's student loan records. The two were among nine former employees of Vangent Inc., a company that was doing work there, a contractor to the Department of Education. They were accused of viewing Obama's student loan records between 2007 and 2009. Three other defendants have already pled guilty, and four are scheduled for trial. The funny thing is, we still don't know anything about Barry Ho's student loans. I mean, you got nine people who looked at it. How is it that we don't know? And what's happening in these plea deals? Are they pleading and, signing something that says we won't ever say what we saw? How is it that we don't know? How is it that this has not leaked out? Why is it that Barry just doesn't release the records of how he got his student loans? Anyway, I just don't understand why that story just kind of keeps drip, drip, dripping in the background and has not yet come to a head. But perhaps it will. We will keep a vigilant eye out here at the Weekly Worldview. All right, more from the politics file. From Michigan, CapitalConfidential.com, from Ann Arbor, Michigan. Here in Ann Arbor, firefighters are being laid off due to a multi-million dollar budget deficit, but the city has agreed to pay German artist Herbert Dreisel $850,000 for a three-piece water sculpture that would go in front of the new police and courts building and over there by City Hall. So we're laying off firefighters and police in crime-ridden Ann Arbor, Michigan. And they're going to put in an $850,000 piece of, I'm sure, detestable modern German art there in front of City Hall. Ann Arbor student council member Stephen Kunzelman, a Democrat, is opposed to the art deal. Oh, here's a Democrat who's off his meds. He says, I think it's incredibly insensitive. It's insensitive to the staff and their morale. It's insensitive to the community. There are people out there struggling financially, and here we are spending a large amount of money on a piece of art. Kunzelman said the city is also eliminating the solid waste coordinator from the budget, which oversees trash pickup, and they are hiring an art coordinator. I'm not making this up, so I guess we'll see. Visit Ann Arbor in 2 years. Let's see how they do 2 years without a solid waste coordinator and 2 years with an art coordinator. Let's see how that works out in the streets of Ann Arbor. We'll be right back. do you think that the streets of Ann Arbor will be overflowing with art in 2 years? Do you think that's what's going to happen there in Ann Arbor? I suppose that the residents there will have an opportunity to see that, and you and I, if you don't live in Ann Arbor, will be fortunate in our not living there. All right, now, one more from the politics file, and this one is really just for laughs. From New York, the Associated Press, United States Representative Charles Rangel says he doesn't want any special breaks when it comes to charges that he violated ethics rules. The 80-year-old congressman, 80 years old? Charlie Rangel's 80 years old? I mean, the guy looks good. You got to give him that. I mean, he may be a hell-bound demon, but he looks good. Maybe he made some kind of deal with the devil. I mean, nobody looks like that at 80 years old. But I guess he can afford a lot of care, apparently. The 80-year-old congressman got a warm welcome when he arrived at a hospital in New York City, up there in Harlem, last Saturday to speak about health care reform. Yeah, he arrived at the health care event dressed in all white. Yeah, dressed in an all-white suit like a pimp. And he was smiling and shaking hands. He had a big old gold ring on, and he was telling reporters that he's counting on the American tradition of being presumed innocent until being proven guilty. He certainly is taking advantage of that like no one before him. He is relying on that misguided assumption. He says that all he wants is fairness. Yes, fairness is what he said. Now, many people mistakenly assume fairness means giving equal time and consideration to both lies and the truth. And that's what Charlie Rangel wants. He wants fairness in that sense.
Well, I'd like you to at least consider my lies at least with the same quality as the truth as you hear it put before you, so that you can make a decision based on an equal hearing of my lies. That would only be fair.
But, ladies and gentlemen, fairness is trumped by truth. Fairness is trumped by truth. Now, it may not appear fair in the sense that there are 654 pieces of hard evidence against Rangel and only 6 exculpatory facts. That may not seem fair on its face, but that would be the truth. Now, do you think that Rangel should be allowed to lie about the 648 in order to have a fair and balanced trial? For every fact that's introduced, should Rangel be able to introduce a lie? Would that be fair? I think a lot of people think that's what fairness is all about. I mean, even Fox News, which is the bastion of conservatism in the American media, feels it necessary to give equal time to lying sacks of dung nightly so that they can fairly oppose the truth on the air. It's just sad. Well, let me ask you this, ladies and gentlemen. Do you think on Judgment Day, God is going to allow you to lie? Do you think God is going to give equal time to your defense? I'm speaking, of course, to those of you headed straight for hell with jet rockets, like the folks there in the Barry Ho administration who we know monitor this broadcast. Do you think God is going to allow you to lie just so he has a fair trial? Well, think about that, because Judgment Day is real. It's coming. You are going to meet the Creator, and he is going to demand an account of your life. And he's not going to be interested in fair and balanced. He's going to be interested in the truth. All right. Now, can we find something that is less depressing than thinking of 80-year-old Charlie Rangel dressed up like a pimp marching around Harlem, glad-handing all the welfare recipients up there that have been at his trough for the better part of 80 years. My goodness, he's had people at the government trough for 2 generations, 3 generations. Unbelievable. Let's move into the bad religion file. from Denver, Colorado, from the AP, federal scientists say an exotic fungus spreading through the Rocky Mountains is threatening Colorado's oldest trees. Yes. What are the oldest trees in Colorado, you might ask? Well, I'll tell you. The gnarled limber and the bristlecone pine are known to live longer than 2,000 years. But they are currently being oppressed by the white pine blister rust fungus. Tell me that doesn't sound awful. I hate to tell you this, sir, but you have white pine blister rust fungus. We're going to have to remove your limbs. That's an awful sounding fungus. According to AP, there is no known cure for the white pine blister rust fungus. U.S. Forest Service scientists and other researchers are trying to find ways to slow its spread. The fungus is also threatening white bark pine trees in Wyoming, Idaho, and Montana. So, let's say you're a neo-pagan. You're an earth worshiper. You worship nature, and nature is God. How do you choose between the bristlecone pine and the white pine blister rust fungus? What gives you the right to judge that the trees should live and the fungus should die? I think that the average dirt-worshipping pagan is in quite a quandary about which entity should they worship as God. Should it be the fungus or should it be the trees? Somehow with these pagans, the trees always win out. Now me, I want the trees to live, because trees are useful for making baseball bats and houses and crutches. And trees are much prettier than a white pine blister rust fungus. But then again, I have a relationship with the creator of the universe and the living God. So I have some basis upon which to judge. It's called a rational decision in favor of the trees. But upon what would a pagan base his decision? I mean, is he a fungusist?
Fungus.
He just hates fungus because he hates fungus? Is it an irrational hatred of the fungus? And why does he love trees so much? Might want to think about that. What's going on there, buddy? All right, let's move on. We'll let the pagans struggle amongst each other as to whether or not to worship the trees or the fungus. We'll move on to the world of bicycle racing. Floyd Landis, former Tour de France winner, has made a decision, he says, to come clean about his own doping and is making sweeping accusations against others, including Lance Armstrong. That's right. Yeah, Floyd Landis. You remember he was stripped of the yellow jacket or whatever it is that the whatever homo wins that bicycle race in France? That's just an editorial comment. I don't think Floyd was a homo. And I don't think Lance was a homo. Let me just take that back. That was unnecessary. But I just, you know, the spandex and the tight thing and the shaving the legs, it just makes me uncomfortable. I'm just going to say that, but they're probably fine heterosexual guys. So ABC News interviewed Floyd Landis, and they said, are you saying that Lance Armstrong is a fraud? And Landis, in fine Clintonian tradition, said, well, it depends on what your definition of a fraud is. He says, I mean, look. If Lance didn't win the tour while he was all doped up, someone else who was doped would have won the tour. So, I mean, everyone was doped up. So, I guess what I'm saying is, yes, he's a fraud. Floyd, the thing is he says he never doped. Well, Floyd says that they doped all the time. And it's just an attorney for Lance Armstrong adamantly denies Landis's allegations, as you can well imagine. But let's talk about Lance Armstrong. Now, this is a fella who's practically worshipped everywhere,
yeah,
right?
Next to the tree.
Yeah, I mean, he's above the blister fungus. He's above the trees. I mean, he's up there in the third heaven of pagan worship is Lance Armstrong. Let's see. Now, what Lance, you'll remember that Lance Armstrong met one Kristen Richardson back in 1997 before he was world famous. They married in May of 98. And they had three beautiful children, Luke and two twins, Isabel and Grace. Grace was born in November of 2001. Now, then, Lance Armstrong began dating singer-songwriter Sheryl Crow back in the autumn of 2003. And Lance's wife, Kristen, filed for divorce in, oddly enough, the fall of 2003. And then the jerk, Armstrong, revealed the relationship with the pagan singer, Sheryl Crow, in January 2004. After that, they got married. Now they're divorced. He's shacking up with someone else. He got her pregnant. He's going to have another kid. All that. So that's Lance Armstrong. Third strata of heaven amongst the pagan deities. What does Armstrong say in regards to religion? According to his biographer, he says he is an agnostic. And he's quoted as saying, now listen to this. This is interesting. Lance Armstrong says, quote, at the end of the day, if there was indeed somebody or some presence standing there to judge me, I hoped I would be judged on whether I had lived a true life, not on whether I believed in a certain book or whether I'd been baptized. If indeed there was a God at the end of my days, I hoped he didn't say, but you were never a Christian, sir. You're going the other way from heaven. If so, I was going to reply, you know what? You're right. Fine. So that's Lance's opinion of religion. He wants to be judged on whether he lived a true life. Lance, perhaps you don't understand what you have committed yourself to there. Because to say you lived a true life would be to say that you were always true and that you never lied and that you never cheated on your wife and that you never shacked up with a pagan singer and that you never lied to everybody about it, that you never lied to your wife and your kids. Lance, if you're going to be judged by that standard, well, you're going to end up saying to God, God's going to say, Lance, you're guilty. You didn't live a true life. Besides the fact that you didn't get baptized, you weren't a Christian, you didn't believe in my book and all of that, you're a dirtbag. I can't have you come and live in heaven with me. And Lance will say, you know what? You're right. Fine. And God's going to strap the jet rockets onto him and send him straight to hell on his bike.
Faster than anybody.
That's right. He'll go to hell faster than just about anyone. Because it's a downhill from what I understand. let's see. Now, we're just about out of time, and I hate it when that happens. Let's try. We've got two more from the bad religion file that we'll do before the end here. And then this story, I really wanted to do that story, but I'm not going to have time. Let's see. Okay. I don't know more about that. Lindsay Lohan. Oh, I really wanted to cover Lindsay Lohan. Well, I do because it's serious. Now, listen to this. Lindsay Lohan has been sentenced to jail. It's 90 days. She's only going to do about 2 weeks. So here, you know, here's Lindsay. She came in thinking the justice system was a joke, right? You saw the fingernail paintings and the expressions on her face and the showing up hungover and late and all that. You saw that. So she thinks the justice system is a joke. She gets sentenced to 90 days. For a moment, she's scared, and she might actually repent and change her life. But then she finds out that the justice system is a joke, and she's only going to do 2 weeks. And if she can just hang in there, she'll get by, and then it's party time. So the fact that the justice system is a joke is now confirmed to her. Confirmed. It's true. And she's likely to mistakenly assume that justice itself is not credible. See, and that's the mistake that Lindsay's making. Is she assumes that the justice system out in Hollywood, if she assumes it has anything to do with actual justice and how she's going to be judged and the fate of her eternal soul, well, I mean, she might as well hop on the bike with Lance, for crying out loud, because she's on her way. And it's just sad to see such an average-looking young lady with no talent. It's just a shame to see her... All right, more from the bad religion. I don't want to do this story about the Catholic priest. It's just disgusting. Let's move on. From Indonesia, the Reuters wire, Indonesian Muslims were shocked to learn last week that they've been praying in the wrong direction. That's right. They found out that instead of facing Mecca, they've been facing Africa. Yeah. But it has been decided that the mosques are facing Somalia or Kenya. That's what the Islamic Board of Imams there have decided. So they're now suggesting that people shift their direction slightly to the north and to the west. Let's see here. Head of the Muslim whatever over there told Reuters, "There's no need to knock down the mosques and rebuild them. We just tell people to shift their direction slightly during their prayer to make sure that they're facing Mecca, and they're not infidels. If you do not adjust your position, we will remove your head, infidel." One official said Muslims need not fear that their prayers have been wasted because they were facing in the wrong direction, because Allah is a false god, so it really didn't matter that you're facing the wrong direction, because the whole thing is just made up. All right, do we want to do... Well, that's it. I just can't do anymore. I can't do the Catholic priest. It just makes me sick. I'm just gonna close it out. I want to thank my friends at Denver Bible Church, of course, at kgov.com online. My good friends at Personhood USA, Personhood Colorado, and Colorado Right to Life. Looking forward to the Amendment 62 campaign. And, of course, I want to thank my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios for your entertainment and edification. Thank you, Daryl. I will be back with you next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.